So now that we've completed, I think a lot of things this morning were probably pretty evident and things that people have used. I think what's more exciting during this session is starting to dig into some of this infrastructure as code. So we get to talk about that a little bit now, which is nice. Is anyone here using any infrastructure as code? We got one, two, okay. We'll just keep going. Ooh. So again, you can see that this really follows a very similar pattern to software development. Really the idea of automating the deployment of the infrastructure that you need to run on. As well as during that process, really starting to learn from it and optimize. As you deploy it and test it, figure out what you actually need. It should really accelerate the amount of time it takes to deploy things on infrastructure. I mean, the big case that people talk about is comparing this to like on-prem solutions, right? It took me like 3 weeks to secure a server, right? I mean, this is, hopefully you're not doing too much of that these days. But even next to the cloud, you can make this happen extremely rapidly, right? So the idea of things taking, you know, hours or days can take, you know, seconds potentially, depending on what you're doing. So it's a big scale shift. So you can move to a deployment rate that you might be uncomfortable with certain deployment rate numbers. I was on a team doing a startup, and we were deploying to production 220 times a day. And so to me, that was a scale change, right? Historically, it wasn't even possible. And in today's world, you really dictate it at the rate that you deploy. It's not really the technology holding you back there if you're using the cloud, if you're using things like infrastructure as code. So I'm a big proponent of using PaaS services. Are people here familiar with PaaS, using PaaS? So PaaS services are typically seen as a company like Microsoft doing most of the work around your solution to make it run well. So case in point would be like a website or a web application. On Azure, you can basically kind of forget that it's IIS, you can forget that it's Windows, you can forget about all those inner workings of the server, you can forget that it's connected by Ethernet, you can forget all those things, because Microsoft is handling it for you. But it also enables us to do some more interesting things. So we can do like backup of your application, and you know, if your application ever goes down, we can pull that backup to a new data center anywhere in the world, repoint your DNS, and have it back up and running extremely rapidly. And so what I'm trying to get at there is the more that the infrastructure knows what you're trying to do, the more it can help you do that and offer you features around that. So things like SQL Azure, where we have automated backups and retention policies and things like that just given to you, right, without you thinking about it, or like high availability and things like that.
So how about porting an existing set of legacy applications to something like a PaaS?
So, that's a broad topic into of itself. Usually today, pretty successful doing that. For like Azure websites, I mean, we support a number of languages and technologies there. So a lot of times you can just, you know, throw things in the web application and get it to run. There are some things typically that you can't do that you need to think about. Things like if you're, writing things to disk on a web server, you might not be able to do in the PaaS solution because we don't really give you the rights to go bonkers in like a shared environment or whatever the environment is, right? So there are things to think about, but as Azure works, we try and open it up as wide as we can, but obviously we have to take into account things like security. If you do need to maybe chop things up and rework things, then maybe that's not even appropriate. So that's where you can start falling back on the other types of services we provide. So again, today, containers are getting really popular for portability. So if you have on-prem stuff, a good idea maybe is to start packing things into containers. So that helps your infrastructure on-prem, but secondly, it also helps you move it potentially to cloud providers. And then a further fallback would be if you have legacy stuff and you really need to ensure that the OS is Windows 95. I mean, not that we support that on Azure, but if you really need to ensure like what bits are run on a VM, you can put it up as an IaaS VM. So then you control the entire environment there, right? Sorry?
What do you mean? Because we have some legacy applications that are like 32 bit, nobody wants
to. Yeah. So, I mean, infrastructure as a service really is just like a VM, right? And you can pretty much run whatever you want in it. I mean, there is some compatibility stuff there, but it's pretty open.
We looked at, we didn't find any option
right, so once you start stretching back over 10 or 15 years, it becomes problematic because virtualization didn't exist back then. And then also just the legacy inherent security issues with it, right? So we'd have to look at that specifically as to why, but yeah, it can be an issue if you're going back 10 or 15 years. And so this is, I mean, all these choices are one big reason that, you know, like while you're maybe forklifting stuff onto the cloud or while you're developing software, this is why it's important to have, you know, both the developer hat in the room and the operations hat in the room. Because once this gets deployed into any one of these types of environments, whoever that operations kind of person is, they need to kind of understand how to, you know, maybe scale your product out or bring it down for cost savings or things like that, right? And each one is slightly different tool sets, different comfort level for people. And containers, to me, it's pretty green technology. There's quite a few companies using it today, but it's gonna go through a lot of maturity over the next couple years because it has had such rapid adoption. So for those of you that are familiar with Azure, you're probably aware that we basically service everything that you can do in Azure as a REST API. And it's a really fundamental and core building block of both the application development side, but particularly in the infrastructure as code side as well that we see today. So you'll see there that the REST API box is basically checked for everything. And those are always being built out and revamped. Alongside that, a lot of people then outside of the SDKs will drop into PowerShell historically. And so basically the PowerShell have modules that are just hooked up to those REST APIs. And then that's been in there again for 5 or 6 years at this point. So they're quite mature. Alongside that, and I'm not quite sure when this started, but over the last few years we've been doing cross-platform tooling. So if you're operations or infrastructure kind of person and you run a Mac or a Linux, you're able to still hit those APIs and programmatically change the environment as you will. And so, yeah, I mean, there's other tools there, Chef and Puppet, things like that, that work alongside or in concert with these. I wouldn't say that any of these are mutually exclusive, right? It's kind of like pick a little bit of this and pick a little bit of that, whatever's right for the job to get things rolling. How many people have used the PowerShell? Probably everybody. And everybody's used the REST API. Maybe if you've logged in and you didn't get a subscription, it might be arguable that you haven't, but basically when you're in the portal, it's really hitting the REST API. So the big one, the big technology that we're moving to is Azure Resource Manager. And who's familiar with that? Anybody? A couple people. And so the fallout with Azure Resource Management is that we have a JSON format that are the templates, and they really define what infrastructure looks like. So you can describe environments of servers in JSON format, and then the Azure Resource Manager will take that JSON file and actually stand up all the services that you need. And so this is really what I'm getting at. I mean, you can drop back to PowerShell, but I would really argue for moving in this direction. Going forward, this is the way that Microsoft really sees kind of the future of building out cloud environments. And there's some big reasons for that. I've had a lot of fun with PowerShell over the last few years. What ends up happening is you start describing like thousands of lines of PowerShell code that say stand up this, and then stand up that, and then stand up this. And really to mitigate failures along the way, you end up with a lot of code potentially, right? This is what Azure Resource Manager is built for. So Azure Resource Manager understands, the easiest example for me is really like a web app connected to a database. Okay, so in the JSON file, you say, I need a web app and I need a database. It understands that the database needs to be spun up first and the connection string needs to be pulled over to your website and put into the web config and then stand up the web server. If it didn't understand that, you really don't have anything working for you, right? So this is where Azure Resource Manager gets pretty cool in that it's very flexible, it can understand the hierarchy, it can pass variables back and forth between the systems and all that goodness. Very complex things, or they take a fair amount of code if you want to write that in PowerShell and then manage that code change over time. This is really the way to go in place of the PowerShell stuff. And so for those of you that are really familiar with Azure, you'll see in the new portal that when you're actually deploying a VM today, it will stipulate how do you want to deploy it. It will say classic, or maybe it says template or something like that. So classic is basically like saying drive it through PowerShell, drive it through the REST API, where the new way of doing it is powering it through ARM templates. The reason why you want to keep that in mind is there are a few differences. If you have like a VPN set up or something like that, and they were all set up in the classic way, then you're going to want to continue to deploy that way. In all other cases, I would recommend just starting to go with the new way. Cool. So ARM is pretty extensive. I didn't demo too much last week when we did this, but I do want to show you basically, you know, make sure that you're not scared of what the templates look like and just get a good feel for what they can do. Oops. Okay. So first off, we held some hackathons in Redmond to produce these templates. So, actually I'll show you one other thing too, but first off, you really shouldn't be writing these from scratch. Please be lazy. This is the best way to be lazy. You can clone this repo. It has like a couple hundred examples at this point of standing up services. You can execute them right away to deploy into your Azure subscription. But more nicely, you can copy and paste this into a repo, start making modifications, and start deploying to those resources you've stood up. They come in kind of like a academic number level. Typically the 100 levels are the single things that you want stood up. So if I want a Linux server or Oracle or SAP, you'll probably find that maybe in the 100 level. If you want something like I described where you want a web app with a database stood up and the connection string passed between the two, you'll start getting into the 200 level. And we have a bunch more that are even more complex. The really nice thing here, right, is that what's a good example? I don't know, but companies that have been like developing and deploying software, and these can be like companies I use loosely, like in terms of maybe you have like a LAMP stack, but you want the web server to be hosted for you and you want the MySQL to be hosted for you and like all of those different components, a Redis cache next to it. Those are pretty complex environments that typically would take people a little while to either create them manually or else develop scripts for. The nice thing about this is it's really just, you know, that one file that you have to maintain and build out. But it really opens the door for companies or open source people to build those templates and then, you know, surface them to you somehow through a website or something like Git. So I'm going to jump into probably just like a web app with a SQL database. I do want to show okay, so we're into the 200s here. I mean, there's some interesting things, right? And definitely, like, if you're a fan or just what Microsoft has been doing in the last few years in terms of we are like fully supporting like Linux stuff and what else do I see here? Yeah, I mean, so Linux with Azure Storage running a Ubuntu box. I mean, these are options that you can actually control and stand up with very little lines of code. Yeah, so you can see that at the 200 level, most of those things are kind of at least two pieces of infrastructure that are going to work together to build your environment. So I don't see the SQL Azure one at hand. But I will open up the document DB with a web app, which is kind of the same thing, right? So it's a database with a web front end. So the big thing you'll see here up in the top are you'll see the JSON file, which is the Azure deploy. Again, we're going to crack these open in a second. So that's going to be the template. Within the template, you have the ability to put like custom variables that basically you can pass into the template as it's creating the environment. We can actually stand up UI on Azure as well that'll give you like text boxes for that if you want to drive that way. A lot of people use a parameters file, which you can see second in the file there, or the second file for the Azure deploy is a parameters file. Now that is really great if you want to check in your parameters, and you could say have one per environment maybe, or there's a lot of ways to drive that way. You can also, you know, kind of create them on the fly, pipe them in through PowerShell as you're deploying to a specific environment. So there's a lot of ways to do it. At the end of the day, all we're doing, again, is calling a REST endpoint, throwing a little bit of JSON at a REST endpoint. Sounds pretty familiar. And the JSON is the template. The REST endpoint talks to the Azure Resource Manager to make this stuff happen for you. Pretty simple. But you will see, and this is kind of interesting, right? So you will see buttons like this available to you on websites that want to provide you with deployability to Azure. And again, that's all they're doing, is they're doing a GET with that JSON file to an endpoint in your subscription, which is pretty interesting. But I'll pop this open. And again, we don't have to go line by line, but just so that you're kind of comfortable a little bit with how it works. So I'll just point out a few things that are kind of important, right? So you'll see here on the web app, there's a service plan. So if you're familiar with web apps, we have like a free tier and we have down to a premium tier. At this level, what this template is saying is whoever is using this template can choose any one of those levels. Now the nice thing for you is if you're developing custom software, you might actually gate this to being maybe like a premium and a basic, and by default it's basic, but when you get to production, you're going to want to say, I want it at a premium tier. So you can actually control that list, and it can be a subset of the offerings that are available on Azure. Yeah, so with each one, again, you can see there's a default value. In this case, it's free. If you don't specify it, then basically you'll need to specify it during the execution of the template. Okay, so then you get into the actual resources and resource creation. And sorry, I'm just trying to look for the connection string there. Dun, dun, dun. Okay, well, so it's a little bit different with Document DB, but it basically has like the endpoint there, we'll say, is like the ability to connect to it being passed in at the bottom there. But you'll see that it has the resource creation above that. And then it ties together the endpoint and then the key for access, which is kind of like a storage account if you're not familiar with DocumentDB. And this parameters file just kind of, I think checked in, they just kind of have it basically summarized what you need to fill out. And again, this kind of just underlies the defaults that the creator of this file wanted to have. So change me, you're going to need to change if you want to execute this. And let's just see what happens when I click this. So even internally, I mean, you can create these templates and provide them on an intranet if you want the people the ability to spin up resources really easily, things like that. So the big one there that I just point out, again, this is manually driving. Obviously, there's lots of ways to automate this, but the interesting thing there is on the right is it's actually understanding the template and building UI against that. And so the service plan SKU is based off of the list that you give it. And then secondly, you can type in whatever you want for all those change me variables that we saw. And it knows that some things are required and some things have defaults. I think that's pretty good for the ARM templates. Does that make sense? Is this mind-blowing, new, good? And I'm not going to pull up the PowerShell here, but the PowerShell command is basically like pass the template next to a parameters file and or pass the template plus a bunch of variables that get replaced in your template during deployment, like super easy. All the work's happening with the Azure Resource Manager on Azure, so end of the day, all you're doing is building a bit of JSON and throwing it up there, right, which is pretty straightforward. And I really bring up PowerShell because it's kind of normal, but honestly, you could just curl it up there, right? Like, you could seriously, like, command line a URL up there. Like, the automation is pretty much wide open. As soon as you get the authentication level, the actual, I forget if it's a get or a post in that case, right? But it's pretty straightforward. You can really run it from any language. Okay, I have one more trick up my sleeve that I think we don't talk about as much as we really should. Okay. So again, like, why would you do any work when you don't need to? So this is another piece of not doing any work. So I went to resources.azure.com. And so for the people that already have resources in Azure, this doesn't necessarily complete the whole picture, but this starts building your JSON template for you already. It's done, okay? So if you come to resources.azure.com, you'll see subscriptions. I have no idea which subscription. I don't even have any in the subscription, but. Yeah, so it does look like I have a resource group. But basically here, well, this will let you start building up that JSON, looking at that JSON that you've already been building, maybe manually or using PowerShell and REST APIs. And let's see, this is a new tab. I wanted to see what this does. Yeah, so it'll actually start telling you how to kind of maybe build this stuff automated. And I'm not going to do that. That looks scary. But just be aware, resources.azure.com is your friend if you're moving into ARM templates. At least for, at the very least, just to understand the components that you've already created, right? To kind of reverse engineer. Definitely for the exercise over the next couple of days, I'd recommend writing down this URL or just understanding that you can search for GitHub, Azure, Quick Start, something like that. It'll get you here and let us know. And then alongside that, it will have schema description in JSON for each type of service that we provide. One note, I guess, is not every Azure service today is available using these, but it is getting, I don't know, it's like the 80% right now or maybe 90. And where there are limitations, you can always fall back to PowerShell or maybe Chef and Puppet or maybe DSC if you know desired state configuration, things like that, right? So end of the day, this really doesn't limit you. This gets you way down the road of infrastructure as code without crazy investment in time.